Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam on Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. Today's show asks the question, how can Muslims conduct business ethically in today's world?
Business, ethics, Islam. The current global malaise is mainly a result of unethical business practices. A tidal wave of interest accruing credit was unleashed on US homeowners, creating a property bubble that burst asunder and caused what came to be known as the credit crunch. Not halal. So today is a good time to explore what a true Islamic business ethics could look like. With a host of chief executives and CEOs paying themselves record amounts, does Islam have anything to say about how much people should be paid? Also, what should we be trying to achieve when doing business? To make as much money as possible? To create something that benefits society? Or to worship Allah? Around 50% of British gross domestic product stems from business practices prohibited by Islam. And in the US, the financial sector accounts for over a third of all corporate profits. So how far can an Islamic business ethics be reached in an economic order where not even the basics of Sharia law are in place? This week, Islam and Life asks, how can Muslims conduct business ethically in today's world?
So from around the world, we listen and we hear Muslim scholars and Muslim intellectuals and businessmen being involved in the world of, you know, business and training and management and finance and economy. They are talking about Islamic economy, Islamic finance, Islamic business and ethical business as well. So what is really what we call Islamic ethics in business or in finance or Islamic finance or Islamic business? Is there something which is specific? How can we define this? And then what is happening now around the world when we hear about this happening in the States, in Europe, in many countries around the world, in Muslim majority countries as well, where we have people dealing with this? And what is done and in which way it could be improved, not only for the Muslims to feel well with what is done in the name of Islam, but also as a contribution and added value to the practices that we have in non-Muslim countries, for example, and with non-Muslim businesses, for example. So is there something that we can contribute and in which way this contribution could be done and promoted? Well, to answer these questions, I am joined by the author and consultant Tariq Diwani. Tariq is the contributing editor of a new book, Islamic Banking and Finance, What It Is and What It Could Be. Thank you, Tariq, for being with us. The questions you heard about, all these questions, is something which is a very specific field where we don't always have a clear Islamic answer. So in which way would you yourself, because you are in the field of finance, businesses as well, in which way would you define what we call Islamic ethics in business or Islamic business? Is there something which is specific in the way Muslims are dealing with it?
Well, if you want a definition, a very simple definition, I think it's quite difficult to give one, but maybe how to decide what's right and how to go about doing it. Now, when you have, you know, a definition like that, you have to maybe ask some more questions about what is right and how we decide what is right.
So, but before coming to this, you know, very often when I speak with people, I say, okay, you know, we have Islamic ethics in business and we have practitioners or people who are specialists in the field that are trying to do something which is faithful to the Islamic principles. And it's the same in finance, it's the same in economy. Many people are saying, oh, do you mean that there is something which is a specific way to deal with business? What do you mean by this? So it's a very the starting point for the people to understand what we mean by that.
Well, I think the starting point is the purpose. What are we doing business for? What are we living for? And when I was at university, I studied economics and accounting and finance, and we were taught that the purpose of business life was to maximize shareholder value, to maximize profits. And actually, that's a value judgment. of a kind, and you find value judgments in religion, and in Islam, the value judgment for us is that the purpose of life is to worship Allah. So there's your first very major difference. Now, if you worship Allah, you have got a very different set of priorities and principles and values driving you, compared to the chief executive officer who's looking to maximize the profits of his company.
So there are two points here that are quite important, and I agree on that first point, which is really important, is the ends, the objectives. What are the purposes? What are we trying to achieve? And this is something which is the starting point of everything. In fact, it's the same in education, it's the same with society, it's the same in politics, it's the same in finance. So it's the very essence of what we also had in the very classical Islamic tradition when we spoke about al-maqasid, what are the objectives that we are trying to reach, and then setting this as something which is the priorities, and then inductively we come to, okay, how do we manage this? How do we, are we faithful to these objectives with our Islamic teachings? The point is that you said a second thing, which is, okay, if you don't want only to maximize the profits, and some people are saying, okay, to be faithful to the Islamic way, you should maybe get less profits. So is this the point? Because at the same time, what we have and what I heard from sometimes Muslims is also, no, we want exactly the same profit, the same benefits, but with Islamic ethics.
Yes, what okay, well, I mean, that's a false choice saying that you mustn't make too much profit. You can make however much profit you like in Islam, as long as you're not cheating people, defrauding them in some way, practicing something that's prohibited, like usury, for example, or gambling, or selling prohibited items. You make as much profit as you like, but then there's a condition on that. And the conditions are that you have to pay zakat, for example. And then there are, there's ihsan, if you like, the excellence. If you give charity from your profits, then this is not compulsory, but it's recommended. So we have conditions, and we have the excellence of behavior, let's say, that in Islam balances the profit motive. So if we go into a little bit more detail, then yes, Islam accepts self-interest as a motivating factor. Islam has rules, like any other legislative system has rules. I mean, it's not implemented these days in many places, but we do have Islamic law and its rules to follow. So that's in addition to self-interest. And then there's the excellence of a behavior, that we want to give charity, that we want to help others without making any profit, just fi sabilillah.
Is it the only specificity that you can see?
Well, these three, I think, are the essential
ones.
They're the essential things that determine motivation, self-interest, rules, and then ihsan, the excellence of a human character.
So let me tell you something, that once again, when I was in South America and dealing with Christian at the grassroots level, and dealing with, you know, businesses, and dealing with, you know, even, you know, cooperatives that are, as we call them, development, they were dealing with values, and they were faithful to some principles, and this was what they, it's called applied ethics, applied Christian ethics. So we already have this in businesses coming from the Christian tradition and the Jewish tradition and other traditions. Now the Muslims are coming in that field with, you know, trying to find a way which is specifically Islamic. So the point is that some are telling me, in fact, what the Muslims are doing is just translating what is coming from this Christian tradition into something which is more Islamic. If you now have to tell us what is happening on the ground, what the Muslims are achieving on that field of applied ethics in business, applied ethics in finance, let us start with the business. What would you say is the state of affairs now?
First of all, let's go back and realize that the Christians and the Jews, their prophets were Muslims. So what they were bringing to humanity was Islam. Moses and Jesus.
So we don't have a front that's
submitted to the will of Allah. So really, we shouldn't make that distinction vis-a-vis Christians and Jews. We believe originally what they bring is the same set of values. And of course, times have changed, and some principles apply to the time, and the Sharia of Muhammad applies from the time of Muhammad till the end of time. But essentially, if you look in the Christian world, for example, you'll find many of the same features that we would argue for as Muslims today. For example, Waqf endowment was a major sponsor of hospitals and education in England. The colleges of Cambridge and Oxford, as you know, were endowed. The hospitals of London were endowed, gifts by wealthy individuals. fi sabilillah,
which is very close to the meaning of waqf, and the essence and the philosophy is the same.
Yes. So there's one example that we actually have a common root in our value system. Mm. So I don't think I distinguish it that way in terms of the historical narrative, but in terms of the practice today. I would say that Islam is the last set of rules which adheres strongly to those divine regulations in business. You don't tend to hear the Jewish or Christian communities, for example, talking about the prohibition of usury. Okay. There are some honourable exceptions. We have in England the Christian Council for Monetary Justice, which campaigns against usury and asks the church to, you know,
which is marginal in the whole.
But it's marginal. It's not the main thrust. It's been replaced by secularism, and there, you know, profit maximisation is king. Yes. It's what is supposed to motivate the human being. Yeah. Human being is supposed to be greedy and so forth. Mm. So in Islam we have still stuck to our principles, and the point is that in that sense we are offering something which is rather unique in the world today. Mm. The practice, and I was going to come on to this, is very, very different. Mm. When you look in the Muslim countries or the West today, it's very difficult to see Muslims practicing these things on any large scale. Mm. There are charitable interest-free loans organizations, for example, many of them, some of them are reasonably large in the United Kingdom and elsewhere, where people who are in trouble or people who want to avoid riba can borrow money free of interest, for example. Yes. Mm. So you have those cooperatives and so forth. Mm. And indeed you had them in the 19th century, many Christian businessmen, the Cadbury family, Bourneville, a town that they built for their workers, and it's one of the most beautiful towns in the country. Yes. Still.
And there is a long tradition, even in the Christian tradition, a long tradition of applied ethics in that field.
Yes, but a businessman helping the people.
Mm. Yes, but let me be practical. Give me an example. According to you, if we look at the world as it is now, and the global order, the global economic order, and you know, anything which has to do with the pressure, you know, it's all about profit, maximizing the profit, competing with others. Give me an example, if you have one in mind, or what would be an example of good governance at that level when it comes to applied Islamic ethics, for example.
You want me to tell you about something that's practical in the Muslim community?
Which is done, or can you say, okay, look, this is done and this is great?
Yes, okay, I can tell you where that does happen. And we need to make a distinction again between two sorts of governance. One is what we tend to have in the secular societies in the Western countries, which is what they call corporate governance. So here's a corporation, it has often a corporate governance department, the government also will add regulations and rules, and the corporation has to try and determine its direction according to these rules, external and internally generated within the corporation. Mm. And these rules are handed down to the staff, the executives, and they have to make sure they don't pay themselves too much, or you know, that there's some system for determining how they pay themselves.
There is an open communication, which is quite important.
Yes, exactly. Right. And there's transparency, and there's also an issue of what does the company do? You know, does it deforest? Brazil in order to make profits.
The very activity of the company.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a broad ethics issue there. Now in Islam, what we tend to have is something that actually comes from the inside out. We have something that's perhaps we can call human governance. Mm. And there are some writers now in Malaysia, Dr. Azuddin Ahmed, for example, who is writing about human governance and saying that we've got to forget these rules that come down from above. Mm. We need people to generate these rules and regulations, to regulate themselves from inside. Mm-hmm. It's well known that following a set of rules that's externally imposed, you're much less motivated to follow them than you are your own set of rules. Mm-hmm. So for example, I know in the City of London, when I was working there in the interest-based system, bankers were paid to get around the rules. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd have a financial services regulator that would come out with a set of rules, and the banks would try to get around them. That was their first response, not to think, oh gee, these are a good set of rules, we've got to follow them, but rather how do we get around them and maximize our profit. Okay. So that whole attitude, that's a major distinguishing factor, I think, between a practicing Muslim who will evaluate everything not just according to the rules of the law, but also according to his internal motivations and what he believes is the right thing to do Islamically. Now I think you have a lot of that in the world today. You have many Muslim businessmen, I'm not saying it's the majority, but you have many of them who are following this internal set of rules and thinking, look, is what I'm doing right? It may be legal, but is it right according to Islam? Mm. And there you have a lot of practical expression. On the corporate governance side, you have efforts to do that. You have the Bahrain Accounting and Auditing Organization for Islamic Financial Institutions and the Islamic Financial Services Board in Kuala Lumpur, which produce governance standards which tell the corporation, you know, how it should be governing itself. But I don't think that these are, they're not really the sort of driving force that the internal rules are for an individual.
It's much more about frameworks and practices that are promoted much more than something which is integrated in your own understanding, or something which is a spiritual take even in your practice.
Yes, and I mean also it's following what is largely a Western methodology.
Yes.
I mean, you know, if you can pass responsibility to a lawmaker and absolve yourself of responsibility,
yes,
it's actually much easier for you as an individual.
Yes, but this is the point. You know, when I'm meeting some of the people who are working, you know, businessmen and people who are bankers, they are working within that field. What they are saying, and this is quite important, three things. The first thing is, oh, that's a very nice philosophy, very nice theories, but at the end it's not really practical. The second is the Muslim scholars are not coming with the specific answers, because first they don't know really the field, and we need much more people committed in that field to come with more efficient answers for very precise questions. And the second is about efficiency. What we are talking about right now is that they are saying, look, that's all good, but we are in a world of competition and efficiency. So is it realistic? And it's as if there is something which is a kind of schizophrenia.
Yes.
Many things are done, but still there is a gap here.
Well, there's a reason. Yes. There's a reason for the schizophrenia, and a large part of that reason is that we don't have the basics of Sharia being in place. If you are allowed to have usury, if you're allowed to have limited liability corporations which grow very big and don't have a soul and don't lose sleep at night, if you're allowed to have gambling and fiat money and, you know, there are a lot of corruptions. Half of the gross domestic product of a country like the United States or Great Britain or European countries today, half of their gross domestic product is something that's either prohibited or very dubious in Islam.
Yeah.
So you have this whole environment of work and rules.
So this makes it difficult.
How can you live Islam? Now, of course, it has to remain, therefore, a largely theoretical exercise, unless you're talking about the individual himself, and he does what's best.
Yeah.
If you're talking about the lawmaking level, then forget
it. So let me come to this. A practical way to improve the situation, what would be the first steps as you see them? Because I really think that this gap between the Muslim scholars and the practitioners on the ground is not helping. Neither the scholars and nor the practitioners. What we need is really, this is what I'm advocating, is that they have to work much more together. So if now you have to come to, okay, what are the first steps to improve the situation? What would be the first step? What we should do now to make it possible and realistic to have this? It's already there. What you said is quite important. We have experiences, and it's not new. It's half a century of practicing and people trying to do their best in that field. But how can we improve this situation?
Well, we're largely in a political game here. I mean, there are very large corporations and political bodies in this world who don't want the system to change. I mean, it brings a lot of money to some and it brings a lot of power to others. And so there's a status quo, a lobby against change. Now, how do we change that? And these are huge and very sensitive questions. But where we can start is in ourselves. We can educate ourselves, first of all. What is Islamic law? What are Islamic ethics? What are we required to do?
But this would be your advice to any businessman or woman.
This is where it starts.
Back,
this is where it starts.
Come back to your understanding of Islam and in which way you want to be faithful to the principles.
Well, at least don't expect the solution to be given to you from above.
Yes.
I mean, get together, work in partnerships. Muslims can work as partners in a business rather than as employees for a large corporation. Set up your partnership. Bring people who have skills. Set up a partnership. Try and do business. Allah gives you your sustenance. He decides what it is before you're born. So try not to worry about income too much. Many times people make excuses, you know, that that if they don't do a little bit of cheating or a little bit of this or that, then they're not going to earn a living or they're going to lose a job. And you really have to get over that and don't believe that. That's your starting point. But there are things that can be done. We can promote the Islamic paradigm if we have courage and if we have vision. And that is something that's not just on the shoulder of Sharia scholars, for example. They are there largely in muamalat, in the law of transactions, to prohibit things.
It's social affairs.
It's based on prohibition, not on permission. Mm. It's not for the scholars to come with ideas. It's for them to approve or, rather not prohibit a particular product. Yes, that's how Islamic law has traditionally worked. Mm. So we mustn't put it on their shoulders, the idea of product development and changing the world. However, they can give us a vision, and what they need to make that work are people on the practical side who deal in good faith. Mm. And I'm afraid that working in finance the last 15 years in Islamic finance, I have not found many people who work in good faith. They are in Islamic finance to make money. Hmm. And, you know, if they can get around the rules, then we're back in the same old problem again.
Yes, but this is a point that knowing what you think about what, your assessment of what is done, the starting point for you is all good to speak about Islamic finance, Islamic economy or Islamic business. The point is that the mentality and even the mindset behind the whole thing should be reassessed. Yes. Is that do we want to make money and by saying at the same time that we are faithful to principles? In fact, it's we have to change, and what you said at the beginning, not only the mindset but the purposes, we have to reassess what do we want to achieve.
Yes.
So this is something which is, you are very critical of what is happening now, and you think that we have to come back to the essence of the whole philosophy when it comes to ethics.
Well, we're starting at the methodology. That's where we should be starting.
Yeah.
You know, are we going to copy structures that have grown up in the secular world, which could not grow on the soil of Sharia, let's say? If you have, you know, the central banking, commercial banking model, if you have limited liability, large multinational corporations, if you have the sort of politics we have today where the wealthiest win the election, basically. These kind of structures are fundamentally not applicable in Islam.
Yes.
At least they haven't been for most of our history.
But what can we do when the order is like this?
Right. Yeah. Well, this is not the order, that's the methodology. The question is, do we copy that methodology or not? That's the first question.
But it's also an order. The methodology is based on an order, and it's a power struggle at the same time.
Right, so let's recognize that we're talking about politics as well as economics.
Yeah.
And the rule of law, if you cannot, I think there was a statement by Said Qutbu, his brother, that a friend of mine was reminding me of not so long ago, that they asked him, does Islam have the solution to every problem? And he said no. And his audience was shocked because, well, you know, as a practicing Muslim,
Muhammad.
So they asked him, why do you believe that? And he said, well, the kind of problems that Islam doesn't have the solution to are problems that are caused by the failure to implement Islam.
Okay.
Or to put it in modern language, if you've got a cough, don't go to the doctor for cough medicine. Stop smoking the cigarettes. So, you know, these issues are the ones that Muslims should debate in the West. Let's say we accept we can't change the system, we're stuck with it. Now there's a question about Islamic ethics, because we weren't in this situation for most of our history. Now we've got a situation where we can't change the infrastructure around us, and yet we're Muslims and we've got to live within it. These are very essential questions for us to answer.
So, and a very quick question, because we are just getting to the end of our program. Just one thing about our collaboration and the collaboration with non-Muslims. How do you see this in the future? Do we have to be much more in touch and exchange experiences with Christians and Jews and other religious and spiritual traditions?
Well, yes.
Or even ethical tradition coming from humanists, for example?
Well, I have myself engaged with Christians and Jews over the last 15 years in many interfaith forums on the subject of finance, and I'm very happy to cooperate with people of sincerity and of genuine faith on specific issues. I'm not going to try and convince them about theology. You know, we can spend a lot of time doing that. But in terms of finance or education, for example, there are key fields where their interests coincide very much with ours. And I don't see any harm in cooperating and, in fact, learning. I mean, how did finance overcome the usury prohibition in Christianity? That's something which I often consider, and we can learn a great deal from that as Muslims. So I think we must engage, yes.
Thank you so much. I think that during this discussion we have been able at least to come to three or four main points which are very important. The first one, which is what you said at the very beginning, is that when we come to try to define Islamic ethics in business or in finance. The very first question is really about the purposes and the aims and the ends. What are the objectives? Are we willing to be faithful to some principles and to do exactly the same as others and to maximize profits without and just saying, oh, we are faithful to some principles? It's really what we want to achieve. And then what you said, which is really important, is to be faithful to principles and to come back. And you said something which is, I think, quite important. At the end of the day, it's not going to come from outside, it's coming to come from a commitment, a personal commitment to be faithful and to be at peace with not only our principles but with our activities and the businesses and the way we are promoting solidarity and serving the people, while at the same time we are not against, you know, making profit. This is not the case. And the third point, which is also quite important here, is what is happening now, which is already people are practicing this, trying to promote a better understanding, new methodologies, but still coming back to the essence. It could be deeper and should be deeper. This is what you were saying. It should be also two things, a comprehensive approach and new practices. And the last point is to learn and to also to add to what is done with Christians, Jews, and humanists that are trying to be faithful to ethical principles. So this could be also a way forward for Muslims and Western Muslims in the contemporary world. Well, that's all we have time for. I would like to hear your views on today's subject, so please email us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. That's islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. I would like to thank my guest, Tariq Diwani. Thank you for being with us, and I hope to see you next week, inshallah.